News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A new federal prison located in Berlin, New Hampshire, finally opened this past weekend. The ribbon-cutting ceremony came after years of community debate over the prison, including a citizen referendum in which residents at first said no to the facility. But after an extensive public relations campaign, locals gave the prison the green light. Still, that wasn't the end of it. Although construction was completed in 2010, the facility sat empty for more than a year due to congressional inaction on the funding to get it up and running. But that logjam was recently broken, and now the prison's hiring more than 100 workers so far, and more jobs are expected. And that's got to be welcome news for the North Country, given recent numbers showing Coos County's August unemployment rate rising to 7.1%, and even higher in Berlin itself at 8.3%. Today in The Exchange, mixed messages on the North Country economy. New hope, old challenges. Let's hear from you. Do you live in the North Country or do business there? How do you feel about the region's economic prospects these days? What do you think would help this area prosper? Join us by calling 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We'll hear from lots of voices this hour. Our guests in the studio are Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle. Charlie, thanks a lot for making the long trip. I really appreciate you being here.
Glad to be here.
Also with us, Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter. And Edith, thank you also for coming in.
It's great to be here.
Well, and lots of economic headlines lately from your region, Edith. Hard to almost keep up. Sum it up for us, if you could. What's jumping out at you in terms of the big economic headlines?
Well, I think the payoff in the city of Berlin has been great with the opening of the prison. The 350 people on site rebuilding the biomass plant, and they are on target. 93% of their procurement and materials that are coming in to convert that into a biomass plant to make up to 75 megawatts of power from wood are already on site.
That's a big deal, too. And talked about for a long time.
It's a big deal, and it's a giant reuse, recycle project, and big cranes are up, and, you know, it's Tonka toy times 1,000.
Well, and just to clarify, Edith, before you add on to your list, that's at the site of that big old
pulp mill plant
that you
saw.
That you see when you come into
town.
That's
right. And so it has an enormous stack over 350 feet or something that's there that's being recycled. It will burn wood. It will get people busy in the woods. In fact, enough so that people are concerned about what's going to do to the wood basket. But they expect to be open just about a year from now, October 2013. And to me, one of the most exciting developments is the installation of a brand new tissue machine at Gorham Paper and Tissue Company. I was there taking pictures when they did some first runs of toweling, and I brought a piece. It's just very different material than regular paper, which is stiff and flat. You know, it's in a roll, but when you flatten it out, this is flexible and fibrous, and it's a different process, apparently, by which you make the paper to have it this way. And they are actually selling tissue now that's made on that brand new machine.
And it's radio, so our listeners can't see the big wad of tissue that you brought in.
But yeah,
that's from this mill that hopes to specialize. You know, that's how they hope to succeed.
They hope to keep the three other paper machines going with other products. But they hope that they're going to sell enough of this that they can get another machine or two in. And that would be a big deal.
Charlie, jump in here if you could. You've been looking at a new initiative, a three-year project to develop a comprehensive plan for the North Country economy. If you could tell us what your hopes are for that process and fold in some of the headlines that Edith mentioned.
Well, I think the key thing on the western side of Coos County is we are very much in a transition stage. As a matter of fact, it's almost like freeze frame on some of these things. I mean, you're aware, obviously, of what's going on up the Balsams, and that's one of the most, I think, scrutinized and watched events in our region.
Temporarily closed down.
Temporarily closed down. A lot of hopes riding on the two Dannys up there that it's going to be reopening. Right now, as we speak, I mean, there's a breaking story happening up there with the former Groveton paper mill. That had been going through for a sale, which was very promising, that there was going to be some new development there, the old mill coming down. And that all fell through in July. But just this week, the board in Northumberland, which is actually the town of Groveton's official area, found out that there's an outfit out of Arizona that has purchased the mill. So the select board and the people of Groveton are very eager, the whole North Country, to find out what does that mean. There's hopes for that. This initiative that you speak of, Laura, this is by the North Country Council, and I think these types of things are good. It's almost like a stop and check where we are in the North Country, and we're seeing a number of these types of barometers being done, assessing where we are as we go through these transitions in the North Country.
Well, and joining us now on the phone is a gentleman who's been involved in North Country economic development for a long time, including in this process that you mentioned, Charlie. With us on the phone is Bino LaMontagne. He's a business resource specialist with the State Department of Resources and Economic Development. He's based in Bethlehem. And Bino, good to have you. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Laura. Thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about one specific strategy that I understand you're looking a lot at, and that's looking north to Quebec. What sorts of possibilities do you see there, Bino, for the North Country economy?
Laura, we actually see quite a lot of possibilities. Governor Lynch, Commissioner Bald, and several of us at our division have gone up to Montreal, to Sherbrooke, to several locations, and then trade missions met with dozens and dozens of Canadian companies who want to come to the U.S. They want to take advantage of the U.S. market, and are just very very pleased to hear about the New Hampshire advantage, if you will. And so there's a lot of hope at this point.
So it's not just tourism; it's a lot more than that, Bino.
Absolutely. In our case, there are a lot of technology companies, there are manufacturers. This last trip, we actually were at an aerospace convention and met several folks there again who really liked what we had to say about our state.
When you talk to these Canadian business people, Bino, what are your pitch points to them and which ones seem to resonate the most with them?
Good question. The first one by far is the fact that we have no sales tax. We have no personal income tax. No inventory tax, no machinery tax, and to them, it's they almost can't believe it. It's just funny to watch as we do our presentations to them, all in French. It's just funny to see the look on their faces when you say none of these taxes. They look at each other as if to say, "Oh, come on, this can't be right."
Or did he not translate that right?
Correct.
Well, there are some challenges too, though, that I would imagine you face, Bino, in promoting this region. I mean, people in the Montreal area, anyway, are used to, gosh, they've got rail, they've got a beautiful airport, they've got terrific highways. The North Country's infrastructure may be a question that comes up, huh?
Well, it certainly is the location. When we talk about where we are, it certainly is. But on the other hand, we can flip that right over and for some odd reason, a lot of them really don't want to be too far from home base. So as soon as we say, you can come to Colebrook, you can come to Groveton, you can come to Berlin. That's less than an hour from the border. That's wonderful. So they, we turn that into a positive, if you will.
If you could add one thing to this, again, basket of selling points that you're making to these Canadian business people, what would it be, Bino? What is it that you would like to say, we can offer you this too, but right now you can't honestly say that?
That's a tough question, because I just think we have so much going for ourselves. The workforce, the kind of workforce that we have, the low tax burden, I mean, to them, it's all music to their ears. You know, they just can't. And in fact, several times I've been told as we're leaving, you know, come on back. You folks are the best secret on the planet. So,
can you tell us real quickly, Bino, if there are any companies, Canadian companies, that you may be on the verge of luring to your region?
I'm very much hoping, Laura, that we've got at the moment four companies that are very interested in looking coming to New Hampshire, and so we're very excited about that. These folks have not only you know, talked about it, they've actually come. They came to Colebrook and Groveton and Berlin Gorham. So there's a lot of hope.
All right, Bino, thanks a lot for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Have a great day.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bino LaMontagne, business resource specialist with the State Department of Resources and Economic Development, someone who's been involved in economic development in the North Country for a long time. The number for you to join us on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And Charlie Jordan, real quick to you on the Canadian connection, if I could call it that, since, as I understand, your house, you can see the border from your house.
I can't see Russia from where I am, but I can see Quebec. Yeah, we're 6 miles from the Canadian border. You know, what Bino, I think if he had was able to get into a little bit more detail there, is there are success stories up there. I think the biggest one that George Bald and Dredd and Bino worked on was Kiops International, which is housed in Colebrook. This is a Quebec-based company, a distribution company. And one of the real pluses is they've become ambassadors as well. So when they take these trips up to Sherbrooke and Montreal, the people from Kiops come along. They have brought in a terrific group of people to Colebrooke. They're very much into natural foods and have their own farm and school and everything. So I think those are the stories that they're showing. And as far as Sherbrooke's concerned, the whole area up there, it's just so close to us. We go up there at least two or three times a month. You know?
I'm wondering if the exchange rate is a concern for these Canadian companies.
Well, right now it's about on par, and there's been a big change there. So we're seeing a lot of Canadians coming down.
All right. Well, a lot more to talk about after a short break. We'll also talk to the city manager in Berlin about the new prison there and take your call. So stay with us at 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. A bargain is music to the ears of any frugal New Englander, and October's benefit of the month is downright symphonic. When you bring your NHPR member card to the Nashua Symphony Association, you can get two tickets for the price of one to any of their concerts. Visit nhpr.org for a look at the growing list of all member card benefits and to get your own card. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from New England College in Henniker, hosting an admissions open house for juniors and seniors Saturday, October 27th, starting at 10 a.m. Information at nec.edu. From Sojourn Partners, providing executive coaching solutions to support ambitious business people in achieving their goals. Plan, lead, and grow. Details at sojournpartners.com. And Bridgman's Fine Home Furnishings, Miracle Mile Lebanon, providing stickley furniture to customers throughout New Hampshire and Vermont. Information at bridgmans.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with local experts about the North Country's economy and the mix of good news and bad news the region has received recently. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. If you live in the North Country or go there often for business or recreation, how do you feel about the region's economic prospects these days? What do you think would help the region prosper? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email us at exchange at nhpr.org. You can post a comment on our Facebook page or at the exchange page at nhpr.org. Our guests are Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle, Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coas County Democrat, and the Berlin Reporter. And both of you, let's go now to Berlin. And Pamela Flam is with us, city planner for the city of Berlin. Pam, good to have you. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, a big headline from your city this past weekend, the new federal prison opened up finally. Lots of cheering about the jobs there. How much are these jobs going to local people, Pam?
I'm not exactly sure of the current breakdown, but the Bureau of Prison indicates that they normally bring in 40% of their own staff and hire 60% locally. Now, locally for us is probably about a 100-mile radius. But on Friday, when they had their grand opening ceremony, there are actually lots of local faces who are already employed there. So that's very exciting for us.
Now, I read a few years back when this project was still being talked about that corrections officers need to be 37 years old or younger. Is that still the case, Pam? And does that create a problem in hiring local people?
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, what that is that's tied into a federal military mandatory retirement law. You have to be retired at 57. So in order to get your 20 years in, they stop their cut off their hiring at 37. And so that is, of course, a challenge for a lot of the people who are displaced mill workers in our community and such. But it's really great that there's opportunities opening up for our young people as well. And so it's nice to see that there are, you know, different opportunities out there, and it brings in young families into our community. And so overall, it's really not that bad.
And remind us, Pam, if you could, the long debate over this. From what I remember, and this is going back a few years now,
sure.
there was a referendum on this, a public citizen referendum. And at first people said no. How come?
There was. It was actually right after the mill had closed for the first time, and a lot of people imagined that the mill was not going to stay closed. It was going to open up any day. And so people didn't think that that was actually necessary for us to expand the diversity of the opportunities available here. And after the mill had been closed for about a year, I think we did a new referendum, and the vote completely flip-flopped in that people were actually okay with us bringing in other ideas for jobs and opportunities for our community.
Local officials have talked a lot about the spin-off effects, too, of this prison. So even if you don't work there, you might benefit. What kind of spin-off are you hoping for there, Pam?
Certainly. Well, you know, there's going to be jobs created in terms of we have people coming in who have different needs than are currently available here in the community. They might be of different ethnic diversity, different religious opportunities, actually, in our community. One of the things that we've already heard, you know, is that, you know, we need a new dry cleaner in town. And so, I mean, just as simple as, you know, new retail on our main street, or it could be as complex as something we just currently don't have here in the region. But there's opportunities to provide for the needs of the new people and families who are coming to our area.
That's interesting. Give us a little more on that, if you could. Different ethnic backgrounds, different religious backgrounds coming to Berlin, and local businesses will need to spring up to support those folks.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's actually roles for our current businesses to perhaps be a vendor to the Bureau of Prisons. So that's one aspect in that, you know, they might find that they need to hire an extra person to help them with that particular venture. So we have a lot of job training going on here in the North Country that's related to how to do business with the Bureau of Prisons. And then we actually have people who are coming up and checking out into new ideas. You know, we actually, speaking of the dry cleaner, had someone come in and say, you know, what do I need to do to set up a business here in town? And so it's really actually kind of opening a few doors that just didn't currently exist here in the area. And it's really nice to see people getting excited about the opportunities that are coming our way.
Well, and it is a big deal, and especially because it sat there empty for, you know, more
exactly.
than a year. On the downside, Pam, if I could ask you this, the state's
sure.
latest jobs numbers show Berlin at an 8.3 unemployment rate. Boy, way above the statewide average, which is 5-point-something, even above the Coos County average. What's behind that, Pam? I would expect it with the mills closing recently, but that's a big difference between Berlin itself and the rest of the state.
It is a big difference, actually. And so here, I mean, what you found is that when the mills closed, it wasn't just the mills that were affected by that. It were the people who worked in the woods. It was some of the businesses that catered to, you know, truck repair or heavy equipment repairs. And so there were a lot of displacement. There was a lot of displacement after the mill closed down. Now that it's opened up, it's going to take a little while for everything to kind of ramp back up and for people to get back to work and, you know, do the jobs they were doing before if they're still necessary. And so it's a little bit of just kind of waiting to see how things flush out and what opportunities are available once everything settles down.
Sure. So it's not just the mill closing and those people. It's all the spin-offs, the restaurants,
exactly.
the truck repair, and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Absolutely.
Pam, good to talk to you as usual. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura. Have a good day.
That's Pam LaFlamme again, city planner in Berlin. The number for you to join us with your questions, comments, thoughts on the North Country economy is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. To you real quickly, Edith Tucker, I think you were at that ceremony this weekend for the prison opening. What was the feeling there?
The press wasn't actually allowed to be at the ribbon cutting. We were allowed to be in a separate room, and those members of the congressional delegation and others who chose to come and speak with us did so. But it was a very upbeat, as we looked out through the windows in the waiting room where we were located, we could look out and see how excited people were. There were a lot of people who already were workers at the prison itself. There are about 140 people out of the 340 that ultimately will be hired there that are on payroll now. So it's going to be a growing population that will be coming in or hired locally. The mayor, Mayor Grenier, was very excited. He said he recognized at least 50 people. And the head of the Employment Security Department, who has worked very, very hard to make it so that people understood how they could get jobs, how they could be vendors to the prison. He said some people came over, some men came over and women, and shook his hand, thanked him for his help, Mr. Belanger, in getting the jobs, getting them to understand, getting them to see that they could be employed there. So much of getting a job, as we all know, is having the confidence to go and apply.
Well, and I didn't get a chance to ask Pam this, so I'll ask you, Edith. There was some talk, again, years back when people weren't sure if they wanted this prison there. The state already has a new, relatively new facility in Berlin, and some folks in Berlin, I remember at that time anyway, said, we don't want to be the prison city.
I think there still are people that believe that. I did a word on the street column on whether people felt the economic effects of a prison. And it's very hard for people to understand that because someone five blocks over sold their house that had been on the market 2 years to a new employee, that it is helping them. So we all feel the direct effects if we're on the payroll, but we don't necessarily see the benefit of prisons.
Let's go to our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. In Groveton, Barry's on the air. Hi, Barry. Thanks for calling in. You're on the exchange.
Yes, good morning, Laura. It's good to talk to you again. Hi, Edith and Charlie.
Hi. Hi.
Good friends of mine. And I'm glad Bino got on, kind of kicked the ball on the field because I worked with him quite a bit on economic development. I think probably one of the things that I really wanted to express about what's going on in the North Country as far as pushing this point. I used to be the chairman of the board of BEDCO, which is the TDFI Economic Development Lender. And 15 years ago, when I first took that position, there's a very turfy atmosphere up here, and nobody partnered or played well with each other. What you've seen in the North Country in the last 5 to 10 years is everybody partners together now.
You said, Barry, excuse me for interrupting, you said turfy. In other words, people were guarding their own turf and not cooperating. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Right. You just didn't see organizations playing well together or anything. That has finally moved on. Now you see a lot of the organizations like NCIC, North Country Council, PSNH, a whole group of people all coalescing now to move forward. I went out with Bino up to Canada to help him out with his efforts there, and it does produce some good, strong leads. But part of the major thing going forward, 100 years ago, we didn't have good roads. We didn't have good rail. We do now. And that's critical to rebuilding the economy.
Infrastructure, Barry. Yeah. And let me just pick up with Charlie Jordan on what you said. I'm interested in that. He said 15 years ago, we were all turfy. We were all watching our own backyard, so to speak,
right.
Not any longer.
I would agree. And the best example I can give is what's happening with the school systems in the North Country. We've got a real decline in some of the classrooms, and nothing to many of these communities is more important to them than their local school. But to suddenly see a consolidation, as is happening with sports teams, with all kinds of schools merging together, trying to pool their talent. I think I'm still amazed at it. I've seen that turn around quite a bit over the past couple of years.
I want to ask you real quickly, both of you maybe. Barry mentioned infrastructure. Bino mentioned it as well, both in positive tones. And, you know, sure, they want to keep it positive. But I've heard another side, Charlie, that, you know, boy, infrastructure isn't what it needs to be in the North Country, especially east-west, in terms of road infrastructure and also in terms of technology, high-speed internet access.
Well, I think the high-speed internet situation is being remedied quite a bit. I mean,
Largely resolved.
Yeah, that's Fairpoint Communications has been doing an awful lot up through our neck of the woods up through there. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when they closed down the Ethan Allen Mill in Beecher Falls, Vermont, they kept the Orleans plant open. And why? Well, Interstate 91 is right outside the door there, so, and we don't have that. So that is still a bit of a handicap for us, I think.
Edith, real quick on infrastructure.
Well, but some of it is long-term infrastructure. Commissioner Bald, in one of his last days in office as head of the Department of Resources and Economic Development, made a special trip to Whitefield last week to look at the plans for the Career and Technical Education Center at White Mountains Regional High School. We have a five-town high school. It has vocational education. It draws from other area high schools, too. And he was very impressed with the plans that are afoot to bring better, more rigorous, more academic career and technical education to the North Country to prepare the workforce. So infrastructure isn't just the cell towers and the bridges and the roads. It's the workforce. It's preparing young people to take the jobs of tomorrow. And it's very clear when you look at the jobs that are created, when you visit something like the paper mill, this is a different kind of high-tech, computerized operation now, and young people need to be prepared for those jobs.
It's often said it's not your father's manufacturing. So,
right.
You know, both of you, another story related to North Country jobs is the continued debate over the Northern Pass project. Most people know, but just to reiterate, this is a proposed hydropower project bringing the power down from Quebec through New Hampshire onto the New England grid. Very controversial. Edith, project officials this month have been holding dinners around the North Country to highlight the jobs they say it will bring. Real quickly, what kind of people are they talking to about those jobs?
They're apparently talking with contractors to make sure to get the names of all the people who could become subcontractors working on the clearing, the cement pads, the
anything from construction to clearing the land,
right,
and so
all
forth.
Of those things that go with, very similar to what they did when they were talking about the biomass plant in Berlin. These are things that you get prepared for in advance, because if a green light does come, you want to be ready during the relatively short construction and period that takes place.
And Charlie, you have taken the unusual step at your paper, the Colbert Chronicle, setting aside your normal journalistic impartiality on this one issue. You have come out strongly against the Northern Pass. What about the jobs, Charlie?
Well, you know, I'm very skeptical of what Northern Pass is doing. I think they're trying to use a job situation to win friends and influence people. You know, we have this the southern part of the state has this view, this misconception, I think, that the North Country just is like being very stubborn on this, and we just don't want to do this. We're weighing this versus other alternatives. We're told that we are a tourist area. We're a second homes area. There's a lot of factors that the Northern Pass will disrupt. So it's not just we don't want to change. We're on a course, and this looks difficult. So I'm skeptical about it, but I know that they had a meeting last night in Millsfield and one the night before in Whitefield by invitation to contractors. So we'll see what happens.
Well, joining us now for more on that jobs aspect is Martin Murray, spokesman for PSNH and the Northern Pass Energy Project. And Martin, thanks for taking the time for us this morning.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, what about the jobs, Martin? What kind of jobs are we talking about, and how long will they last?
Well, I appreciate Charlie's skepticism, but I think that, you know, the proof is he can almost see it from his house. If he looks over the border in Maine, there is a project not dissimilar to Northern Pass. It's a very significant transmission project, and there are more than 2,000 people working daily on that transmission project, most from the state of Maine. So the reality is, for a big project like this, $1.1 billion project, there will be a lot of jobs. We expect more than 1,200 on average, and hundreds of those will be in the North Country. And the types of jobs really run the gamut. As I mentioned, in terms of Maine, most of the people working on that project are from the state of Maine. It's not just the people you might see up on the structures, you know, the people that are very skilled with that type of construction, but there's a lot of people on the ground that are working, Laura. You know, all of the heavy equipment operators, their equipment will be hired locally. So you won't see out-of-state big construction firms bringing in their own equipment, bulldozers and earth-moving machines. We're going to be looking for that locally. So we do have a commitment to hire locally, and there'll be a wide variety of jobs. And we certainly did have a lot of interest, and we had great discussions over the past couple of nights speaking with people in the three communities that Charlie or Edith mentioned.
How helpful do you think this project will be over the long run, Martin? As I understand, after the project is completed, the jobs go away. Is that correct?
For the most part, a construction job is just that. It begins and it ends. It is a three-year construction project, so we're not talking about just building a house. We're talking about something that will be a reliable source of income for, you know, several years for people working on the ground, Laura. Longer range, I guess one would have to look essentially at the tax impact. We're expecting a very significant tax impact with an investment just in Coas County of $228 million. So that's going to bring in millions of dollars in local and county and state property taxes for many years to come.
Charlie, what do you think, real quickly, the jobs argument? 1,200 jobs, even just for 3 years, is it? You know, 3 years is a long time, and 1,200 is a lot of people.
Well, you know, they put apart the pipeline down through Coas County, and there were some people that came in and left, and we had some wind parks put up there, and I frankly never saw any of the employees there, so I don't. That went up. So I, again, you know, people have a right to develop as they wish. But I think when you have to weigh this versus the bigger picture of what we're sacrificing, I think that's what the concerns really are.
Martin, one last question for you. I've read that a new route will be unveiled by the end of the year. Can you confirm that? I know there's been a lot of back and forth on where this will actually or might actually be placed.
Yeah, that's the next real milestone that people have an eye on, and we're very close to having agreements with landowners for easements or for actual property that will allow us to propose a new route for that area. And we did that, obviously, in reaction to Charlie and other people who did not appreciate the initial route that we proposed, and we're doing our darndest to try to develop a route that has as low as possible an impact on our landscape as we possibly can. And we do expect that by the end of the year.
Martin, thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Martin Murray, spokesman for PSNH and the Northern Pass Energy Project. More of your calls about the North Country economy after a short break.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Tully GMC in Nashua, serving the Granite State for more than 30 years with a complete lineup of trucks, crossovers, and SUVs. More information on Facebook or at Tully.com. And the Inns and Spa at Mill Falls on Lake Winnipesaukee, 4 inns, 7 restaurants, a Cascade Spa, Marketplace Shops, and the new Lakefront Lodges at Church Landing. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Betsy Gardella, president of NHPR. We'd like to thank every listener who made a donation during our fall fund drive. We fell a bit short of our goal, so if you didn't get around to making your donation, please consider a gift at nhpr.org. We are committed to bringing you continuing campaign coverage up to and including election night on November 6th. That and more coming up in the next few months from listener-supported NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today we're checking in on the North Country's economy. A lot happening there, as we've been hearing. Join us with your thoughts. If you live in this region or go there often for business or recreation, how do you feel about the North Country's economic prospects these days? What more do you think would help this area of our state prosper? The number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Charlie Jordan, Edith Tucker, let's go right back to our listeners. Jeff's been waiting in Dalton. Jeff, hi. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi there. This is Jeff Woodburn. You have a great group on there. I love the comments and the discussion. There's a point that I think is important to make. Across the country in this political year, people want their elected officials to make tough choices and work together. And I think in the North Country, that's something that we have done, both in terms of accepting prisons and other things that have been unpopular from the start and have really come to be accustomed to living with. And then working together, the Northern Pass Project has really allowed people of very different political views to come together and to find solutions for this problem as well as other problems. But the one real point I think it's important to make about these is when you ask people what draws and holds them to this seemingly inhospitable spot, everybody has a different reason and a different draw, but it is the quality of life, it's the land, it's the landscape, it's the people. Everybody sacrifices and settles. You're not going to make the money, you're going to make it another area. But, you know, I think we've been able to look at the ethos of the area and to be able to sort of filter some of these questions of development. But what's really vital is keeping local control as the issue. And I know it fuddles people from away, but it's that great quality of life that draws and holds people here. And it's one that people are really are important about focusing on protecting, but also being reasonable about finding jobs for people.
It's sure.
Essential.
Well, and Jeff, thanks for calling in. And just to let folks know, Jeff is a candidate for state Senate in Senate District 1, I believe. So thank you for joining us, Jeff. What do you think, Edith? It's an amorphous thought, but it is something you hear a lot. I'm not making as much as I could if I were living in Nashua or Manchester, but I really want to be here. I love the quality of life.
There are many people who live in the North Country who probably could be earning more money elsewhere. But there also are very high-quality jobs that do pay very well. The new managing director, for example, of the entire resort at the Mount Washington is apparently a man who will be moving back to the North Country. He went to White Mountains Regional High School. He grew up in Lancaster, and he's coming back as the top guy at the resort that pays the highest rooms and meals tax in New Hampshire.
Wow.
And so I don't, of course, have any idea what his salary will be. I probably never will, but I'm sure it's very good. The fellow who was head of the hotel itself, that director, grew up in Vermont, went to St. Johnsbury Academy, and he commutes over the river and over to Bretton Woods to hold that job. I'm sure that is a very good paying job. So it's not all people who are not earning money. There are good jobs, and tourism is just a tremendous, you know, they're the mom and pop restaurants that probably people are struggling to keep open. But also the Mountain View Grand, the Omni Mount Washington, there are some very substantial employers.
I want to add to that just quickly, too, that I can't remember in recent times seeing so few, at least on the western side of Coos County, so few empty store lots. They're filling in. There's been a new business, a restaurant opened where the old Susanna's was.
Moonbeam Cafe.
Yeah, Moonbeam. I mean, these spots that had been, when I think of the North Country being depressed, I think of the 1970s, to tell you the truth. There is a lot of that type of thing, mom and pop, that Edith is talking about going on in the North Country. And I think that's very, very good.
This relates to what Jeff said, this next email. And thanks, Jeff, for the call. This is from Katie in Berlin. She says, having been a major employer in Berlin for the past 6 years, I have seen a gradual change from an entirely, quote, old world mill mentality to a far more diverse perspective. Not only are there more businesses like mine moving in, but a new population is moving in. What I call the AMC crowd is discovering the joys and affordability of the town. This group of younger outdoor enthusiasts are buying older homes, fixing them up, and living there for at least part of the year. So it kind of relates to the quality of life issues that Jeff raised, Charlie, but appealing to a new generation.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you another quick example right on Main Street in Lancaster. The Rialto Theater just had two comedy shows. 300 people at each one of those. 600 people in the North Country paying $20 for tickets. You know, the Tillotson Center does the same thing up in Colebrook. There are people who are definitely getting out there, and the new influx of people are adding some new life. So you're going to see a lot more of that in the future, I think, up in our area.
What do you think about that, Edith? And are there ever sort of cultural conflicts between these two groups of people that Katie talks about?
Well, I think there have been in the past, most famously when the Appalachian Mountain Club objected to the relicensing of hydro dams on the Androscoggin River. And that threw a wedge between groups. But that has really changed substantially. And I think the Appalachian Mountain Club now runs internship programs. They work with youngsters in the school, bringing aspects of conservation and an appreciation of the local forests. And I think, I'm not saying they're all singing Kumbaya, but that a lot of that wedge has gone away, and there's an understanding on both sides that, as Charlie said, we're all in this together.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, the AMC itself, but more what Katie calls the AMC crowd, meaning, you know, young people who move to the
really
area because they want
to the
go
area.
Outdoors.
And, you know, people who work 10 and 12-hour shifts, they really didn't necessarily think of hiking in the woods as just what they wanted to do in their leisure time. And
oh, they're exhausted after a long day at the factory.
They're exhausted after a long day. And so it's not that they didn't appreciate the woods, but the woods was a place you worked and not necessarily a leisure activity.
Let's take another call. Thanks, Katie, for that email. And Jane is calling from Limerick, Maine. Hi, Jane. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Okay. Jane, thanks a lot for trying. Hope you try back. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can post a comment on our Facebook page as well. Looks like Jane is back with us. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yes.
You're on the air.
I'm back with you. Yes, I just want to suggest building a gambling casino right beside it.
Beside what, Jane?
Beside the prison.
Beside the new prison. Wow,
yeah,
okay.
Sure. And just think of all the jobs it would create, the gambling casino and the wonderful people it would attract. I mean, if you look down the road at an enterprise like this, it's very bleak and sad. The source of the jobs are people who are in jail, disenfranchised people, dispossessed people, people who don't have an opportunity. The only ones who are going to be making money off this are the people at the top. And it's just a sad situation.
Yeah, Jane, thanks for calling in. So another person, as you mentioned earlier, Edith, who's
less
than thrilled to have employment base be so much focused on, again, two prisons.
You know, the gambling issue is still very much alive. I mean, there's the two representatives, both Republicans, both from the Colebrook area, Larry Rappaport and Duffy Doherty there. They split on this one. Larry is not in favor of gambling. Duffy is. So you're going to see a lot of discussions that break on down. There's been talk. I haven't been able to trace it down, whether this is part of the business plan for the Balsams. But certainly we're going to see gambling being discussed again.
So it's still a live topic in the North Country.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be as emotional as the prisons are far as discussions.
And this is the first time in my memory where we have two candidates for New Hampshire governor who both say they are open to some limited form of expanded gambling. Edith, your thoughts there, too?
Well, I was interested when the Democratic candidate for county attorney spoke at a candidate's evening in Lancaster. He talked about his concerns of what kind of pressure this would, having gambling, would put on the county attorney's job, as well as on the local police departments and state troopers. So it will be interesting to hear a wide range of concerns rather than just a single effort towards talking about jobs on gambling. I think the statistics that I've seen from New Hampshire Department of Transportation shows how very few people who start up 93 actually get to the North Country. And so whether we'd really be able to have a full-scale gambling and casino that would bring in a lot of money, or whether it would be slots, rather, I guess there's some in Maine, that really draw money out of the pockets of people within 50 miles who sometimes become addicted.
I see.
I think there's a whole range of issues on gambling. Probably you could have several shows on that topic.
Oh, we've done more than several. I can assure you of that, Edith. So you're saying, though, that it's a two-part issue to talk about. I mean, people are often concerned about some of the quality of life issues that gambling brings, like you said, addiction, Edith. But, you know, those could be some good jobs, too. That's the other side, and that's what our callers seem to be saying.
It depends what kind of gambling they're talking about, apparently. I'm not a gambling expert in any way, but I did want to mention a big infrastructure push that's coming in really as sort of the end of years of discussion, or several years of discussion, of the New Hampshire brand branding of the North Country. And one of the things that's just gone up are a couple of kiosks, solar-powered, one in Gorham, one in Berlin, that's going to be replicated around the North Country. The ones on Route 3 on the western part of COAS will be funded by the Northern Regional Border Commission, a relatively new commission that gave $200,000 for this effort along Route 3. They also provide funds, $200,000 in funding, to partially fund the new cell tower, 195-foot cell tower in Groveton. So gradually, people are, as Charlie said, working together across watersheds, and I guess Barry Normando also mentioned that we're seeing more things done as an entire county. The infrastructure we're talking about isn't just a new culvert here or a new bridge there or repaving, but people are thinking more regionally. And I think to some extent we must thank the Neil and Louise Tillotson Fund for coming up with ways of getting people together, breaking down those barriers. And the internet is just awfully much easier to communicate with people in Colebrook or Errol or Millsfield than it used to be. I mean, I still on the telephone I can't put your call through because the lines are all busy.
Every week we're all reporting on new DSL lines, you know, on roads that didn't even exist in, and so people are finding much more access. I agree completely with that.
It's interesting, and you talked about, you know, Barry talked about people coming together more regionally. Finally, people used to be turfy, he said.
It used to be turfy, and there were, you had to pay tolls to call people in other towns. And the whole new setup of so many people, either with cell phones or with cable, where they get their phone bundled in there, there is no charge involved. It's part of your monthly fee. So it makes a big difference in how you communicate.
You mentioned a new cell tower, Edith. Did you want to jump in on that too, Charlie?
Well, I think again, that's a very important. I mean, the key thing in the North Country, not too long ago, was where do you stand on Main Street? There's one spot next to Howard's Restaurants. If you don't turn, now we're getting these, access. It's very important. I mean, again, these small cafes we're talking about, they've got Wi-Fi. People are driving up there, laptops. It's becoming pretty sophisticated.
These new kiosks are Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I was a little surprised to think that putting up maps on a kiosk would be helpful, but Kathy Conway, who's vice president of NCIC, said, a lot of people still like maps. They really they don't want it just on the internet. But they have both.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just that one cell tower has made a huge difference.
Right.
I didn't realize that's quite a reach up route.
The topography was so difficult
that one cell tower makes
very
a big
important.
Well, it isn't activated yet. They just started clearing the land for that new cell tower.
So it's hard to believe we're approaching a new year. Here we are, late October, 2013 will be upon us soon. Charlie Jordan, what economic stories are you expecting to cover in the new year?
Well, I think we're all going to keep watching the Balsam situation. That's it's hopeful, but again, in a way, there's also people holding their breath or making decisions. I've taken a temporary job here or there, waiting for the Balsams to open type of situation. And so that will have an impact. But
people are kind of in a holding pattern.
Yeah,
there
are some people in that. But I also think that you're seeing an awful lot of a rebirth of entrepreneurial situations. People are getting into things themselves. They're not so ready to put all their eggs in one basket now. They're taking more chances. More opportunities are coming their way. So I think you're going to see that. I think the school systems, that's a big story up north, the consolidation of schools.
A necessity as people have
it is
fewer
very
kids.
Much so.
And
yeah.
Kids
and it's not so
the
much
schools.
The population. It's just that the baby boom's kids are now, you know, their kids have now come along, and there's not as many of them. So this is, I'm sure, you know, typical of the whole state, not just Northern New Hampshire.
Well, I think Northern Pass is going to almost be a weekly story through 2013 and probably 14 and probably 15 and probably 16, because it really isn't just going to be decided at the local level. These are things that are going to require a federal permit to get across the border, and then the state itself in the site evaluation committee if the presidential permit is given. And the third thing, of course, is permission to cross over on an existing right-of-way. The White Mountain National Forest. Well, it usually is actually in the State Department, but the president could. I think the Groveton Mill is we're going to find out whether they do or don't want a demolition permit and how much. The current owner, who sold most of it, still owns a dam location as well as a natural gas site. So that's big story. Opening of the biomass, the CTE project, career and technical education, really the infrastructure for future training for workforce over in Whitefield. Those are all big, big stories.
Enough to keep both of you busy for at least several years.
And employed.
By the way, Edith, you mentioned earlier the specialized tissue paper from the Gorham Mill. You brought a whole wad of it in. We're going to put a picture on our Facebook page, just in case folks want to see that. Thank you both for making the long trip here to Concord. I really appreciate it. Charlie, good to see you. Thank you so much.
Good to see you, Laura.
Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle. Edith Tucker, thank you also.
Thank you.
Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.